morning and welcome to the August 1st, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. Boy, August 1st. Yeah, it's crazy. Hard to believe, isn't it? Okay. I'd like to thank everyone for participating today and remind you to silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. For those attending electronically, please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session scheduled to begin at 1. Probably because of our short agenda, most likely will begin and finish this morning. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided during the business session of our meeting. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically, signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present. Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, and Rebecca Newman, Administrative Assistant. Today would you please join Mara Giffen in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute.
You'll have to sit or carry.
No problem.
Whoops.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mara Gillen. And I am
Laura,
an analyst in asset management for generation. I was asked to give the HPI minute today. So human performance improvement. A simple definition of this is an error recognition and management program. And asset management, I like to think of as the coordinated activities to meet the district's vision of providing the most for the best for the longest. And I'm going to provide one example of how we do that in generation. So we are implementing HPI by developing processes, documentation, and validation methods. Very touchy mouse, sorry. Some recognized errors. We were not very good at gathering and documenting asset information as part of our project process. We were missing out on this valuable time to gather data on our assets. Simple things like manufacturer and model number and installation dates. We were not relating spare parts to the assets that they were purchased to support. And this led to not knowing which components we had on hand, not knowing where they physically were located when we did have them, and sometimes they were left there in the warehouse or in various places after the assets were removed that they were there to support. Work history wasn't necessarily tied to the appropriate assets, and that work history included crew labor hours and work log notes and materials. And sometimes they were being related to assets that had even been retired. And even after we had installed a new asset, there would be work notes going to the assets that had been taken out of service already. In some instances, it was unclear who was responsible for maintaining and responding to trouble calls on particular assets, the kind of shared responsibilities between different departments. And there's often delays in preventative maintenance procedures being updated after refurbished or replaced assets. So what have we done? We've established a more robust and formalized turnover process, which actually begins back in initiation and has activities throughout the project process. We came up with a project process manual, which has steps for following the district process. And we house this within the scheduling tool Primavera that the project managers are already using. And this creates a one-stop shop for all things project process. We've created a communication tool for documenting, what we call the Equipment Information Spreadsheet, or the EIS. This captures any asset changes, the status of the assets. It captures those missing pieces of asset data, like the missing manufacturers and model numbers and installation dates, who's the primary maintainer, who's responsible for that particular asset. There's a place to capture the spare parts and the assets that they're associated to, and then preventative maintenance, recommended preventative maintenance plans as well. And this tool and this process is shared amongst asset management and project management, contractors, the plant superintendent, the warehouse, and the maximum maintenance planners. So we've created validations that are built within this process too. We have project reports that indicate the asset changes that occurred as part of a project, as well as the status of those assets and any preventative maintenance plans that are maintenance changes that came out of a project. We have a project checklist that comes directly out of a project and that comes out of Primavera, and that indicates whether those activities in that manual have been completed. And we have project acceptance reports that come out of the system as well that indicate that all of those activities have taken place, that have been, and it's been approved by everybody that is interested in the project. And so, in summary, through developing processes, documentation, and validations, Generation Asset Management is implementing human performance improvement. Thanks for listening to me this morning.
Great.
Go ahead.
Well, you used the word did I hear that correctly? Primavera?
Primavera, yes.
And that is?
That's the scheduling tool that project managers use across the district.
Okay. And then is the name of the software package that oversees all of that?
The software package for the scheduling is Primavera. Okay. And then the information from there gets pulled into the data warehouse, which encompasses all of the our other softwares, so Maximo and PeopleSoft, and it pulls all the information together, and then we can extract and create reports from that information.
It just boggles my mind to have those relational databases that all talk.
And, absolutely.
It's kind of like going to the doctor these days with my chart. You know, there's just so much information available, and that's great. Thank you very much, Anne.
So is it Mara?
Mara, yes. Mara Gillen.
So how long have you been with the district? I should know. Don't.
No, 2015 really? In September. So I'm going on just about, 7 years?
Really? Yeah. Well, good. Welcome.
Thank you.
You could teach a course in public speaking. You do a really terrific job. You recognize everybody. You look at everybody in the room. Your eye contact it's amazing.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you did a good job.
She is my husband's aunt. Yep.
Randy or Dennis, any questions? Great. Well, right. Mara, thank you for your willingness when someone asks you to present today. We're the fortunate ones, so that was fascinating to me. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate being able to explain a little bit of what I do here.
So. That's great.
Good deal. Yeah, have a great day.
Thanks, Mara.
Thanks, Mara. Commissioners, staff are excuse me. staff are recommending moving resolutions 10 and 11 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. So do I hear any such request or additions to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I will move that we move resolutions 10 and 11 to the consent agenda.
Okay. And we haven't been voting on that. We've just, legally, we can just, sure. If everybody's in agreement, then we're good to go with that. So the agenda stands.
With 10 and 11 moved to
consent. With 10 and 11 moved to the consent agenda.
Thanks.
All right. Kirk, let's move into item number three.
Thank you. Item number three is a quarterly electric load growth update. We do this every 3 months, but Andy and Chad are with us to just share what's going on with the county and load growth.
Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
My name is Andy Wendell, Director of Customer Service. My colleague here, Chad Rissman, Director of Engineering and Asset Management. We're here today to do the quarterly electric load forecast update on August 1st, 2022. For those of you that are unfamiliar with this particular update, this is a reoccurring presentation where staff can bring forward information about where new and developing electric loads are happening. We talk a little bit about where they are, the type of loads they are, and when we anticipate them coming online. That information helps inform our capital improvement forecasts, our infrastructure planning, and overall helps the district inform our energy portfolio and utilization of that hydroelectric power. So why we're here today, we're going to talk a little bit about the new electric services that we're seeing, meter installations, growth in 2020, and what our load forecasts are over the next 10-year horizon. We'll highlight a few new developments that are happening in the county, including some large loads that are coming into our planning horizon. Chad will give a comprehensive review of the active substation builds and updates and some of our infrastructure planning. There's no action requested today. We always love to get your input. On this particular slide shows kind of that 5-6 year view of new electric meter installations. And there's three categories: residential, commercial, and industrial. Residential being blue and the largest number of our meters. Year to date, we're just over 326 meters. On the residential, we've got a fair amount of commercial growth with no new industrial meters this year, but we are projected to be in that 1,000 meters for 2022. If you look back, the five-year average is just under 900 meters. But we certainly anticipate more meters. A lot of them come in that fourth quarter of the year before the winter comes in. People try to get things buttoned up, so always have a big rush on new meters in the fall time. This slide shows new developments. This is not inclusive of every new meter installation. These are rather large developments, mostly residential developments throughout the county. The larger the circle, see the larger amount of new services. Developments are occurring both in the Upper Valley and the Leavenworth area, Cashmere, INIAD, as well as quite a bit up in the Lake Chelan area, and Wenatchee, both in the central Wenatchee and the south Wenatchee area, is a fair amount of new development plan. This is about a three-year view in some of those housing units, and you can see we're projecting well over 3,500 new residential services across all of these. And what you're not seeing is a lot of the single-family line extensions and, you know, new businesses, new hotels, things of that nature. So a lot going on in the county for sure. we're keeping a close eye on that. You can see coming in there some of the new substations animated in some of those growth areas. So one thing's for certain is there's a direct relationship with where we're building new infrastructure and where some of that new development is happening. There's three areas in particular that we're keeping a really close eye on right now. We're gaining a lot of insights in these particular areas. And we'll be bringing forward more information as things become more solidified for us. In particular, that area in South Malaga, south end of the county, we are anticipating some rather large loads over the next 3 to 5 years, upwards of over 100 megawatts. And as I indicated, there's a number of customers that would make that up. Some high-density loads, perhaps data center-type loads. We'll be bringing more information forward as that solidifies. The Wenatchee downtown area, we've recently been witnessing presentations to the city council and other venues where there's both public and private investments of over $300 million being made. Over the next 5 to 10 years, we anticipate a lot of what I would define as repurposing properties within the Wenatchee downtown area. Repurposing is demoing some older buildings, some egg buildings, as an example, across the tracks here on 5th Street. The old Columbia Coal Store it's just about all gone right now. And that will be redeveloped into multifamily housing, some small retail. Again, that's happening. We're anticipating that to happen across the city. So from an energy standpoint, some of those ag loads or large industrial loads are kind of going away, and we'll see that transfer into more commercial and retail and residential load. We do anticipate some increases in load as a result of that new development as well. And then the third is the Mission Ridge expansion area. This has been in our planning horizon for a number of years now. It's starting to gain more and more traction. The applicant is working through the permitting process with the county and the application process with utilities. We do anticipate a significant increase in demand for electricity, upwards somewhere between 5 and 10 megawatts of energy. And we do recognize that will be over a period of time. There will be a build-out schedule there, so we're trying to get more information on that, working directly with the developer. They do anticipate at some point using Chelan County PUD water, and telecommunications, and, of course, electricity for that development. So that will be phased out, and we'll bring more information forward in the coming months as we gain more insights there as well.
Andy, may I jump in?
Yes.
Where would the Gorge substation be located?
Yeah. You want to tackle that, Chad?
Yeah, I was thinking if we had a map that was close enough. Forward. But so near the dam on the south side of Chelan River, kind of where there's some wrecking yard that's back there. PUD owns quite a bit of property. That's where we've identified the substation location. So we're
on the hill?
Down lower.
Where is it in relation to the park?
It'd be on the south side of the river.
Across the river?
Yeah.
It'd be on the Gorge Road.
On the high school side, but down towards the dam.
Right. I still am not clear. I'll just have
so if you take the Gorge there. Road, if you take the Gorge Road from the high school, you know, from the boat launch
there. I was just
there
this weekend. I just walked that this weekend.
Go by the walking park area. And keep going somewhere where that older car.
It's a wrecking yard.
Oh, right there. Oh,
in so that vicinity.
It's close to the trail trailhead.
Mm-hmm. Very close.
Oh, so it's up higher. I see. Okay. Thanks.
And we work pretty closely with the Trail Association, Chelan, in siting that particular substation. That is Chelan County PUD property.
Of course, we're trying to mitigate any impacts to the trails in that particular area. So, happy to get you some more information. Okay, so all those new meters and these new loads, they translate into making adjustments to our 10-year electric load forecast. So this is a view of forecast that is, it's net of energy conservation. So we have a gross amount of growth, and our conservation group works hard to manage energy conservation programs and brings that total gross number down to a net number. So this is what you're seeing is net. I'd also note that this view does not include some of those large loads that we were referring to, South Wenatchee, the Mission Ridge, and the new development in Wenatchee. Some of that is included. So looking at that forecast, July of 2022, we're still forecasting a base case of 31 average megawatts over the next 10-year horizon. That translates into about 1.5% growth per year. Our high case, you can see, is 107 average megawatts, and then our low case is 16 average megawatts. And one might ask, why is there such a big delta between the base case, which is our highest confidence level, and the high case? The high case really is coming off of about 5 or 6 years of strong interest in large cryptocurrency or large high-density load requests that we were getting. So we baked that into our models. I think in the future, you're likely to kind of see that taper off a little bit in terms of high-density load, cryptocurrency loads in particular. So likely see that high case come down. The low case is, you know, more of a depressed economy or a slow in economic development growth, what we would likely see.
I might just mention we're going to transfer over into infrastructure requirements, but in customer utilities, we're really focused in on the load forecast, try to help us understand, do we have the right amount of staff and infrastructure plans in our capital plans to be able to meet the growth that we anticipate. And so we're mostly interested in what we like to refer to as our organic growth. So organic growth is a little bit less predictable than and understood from the large load growth. So some of the larger developments, Mission Ridge expansion, maybe some of the things that might happen down in Malaga, most of those are tied to infrastructure plans and resource plans. And so because those large applicants are connected to those infrastructure plans, there's less risk of us understanding what infrastructure is going to be needed and staff is going to be needed. So in customer utilities, we're really focused in on this load forecast, try to understand that organic growth where we have less controls in place, right, or less mitigations in place to ensure that we're keeping up with the growth. We understand that the load forecasts are just that, they're forecasts. So it's important for us, I think, to state what our assumptions are and to understand what infrastructure we're planning on building, but then monitoring what the actuals are. So what are our actual capabilities in being able to deliver those facility improvements and added capacities. But then also, you know, since the county and everybody else gets a say on what the growth is, there's a number of factors we're all aware of. What is the actual growth? So that we're not building infrastructure too far before it's needed, but making sure that it's staged and installed in the county at the right place at the right time so that we can serve the loads reliably. So we're constantly monitoring these. We're putting out an annual plan every year. We're updating that plan with some of the, not only the load forecast, but also what our infrastructure build capabilities are. Individual projects might run into challenges through permitting, through material acquisition, through costs, staff availability. So there's a number of things that are impacting our schedules, and we'll get into that just a little bit when we get to the substation slide, but if you would, maybe just keep in mind that there's a lot of factors that are affecting the actual schedule of when we're planning on building things. But the important thing to me is that we've stated what our assumptions is, we've stated what our plans are, and then we start running contingencies and controls around the things that we're seeing differently. So it's a way for us to manage and monitor our progress and our process to be best positioned to stay ahead of the growth as best as possible. So
Chad, is it fair to say that as I look at the idea of organic growth, aside from the big things that you've mentioned, that we do have more control over or more knowledge over, that organic growth is just pretty steady? No, doesn't look like there's any new surprises there. It's just pretty steady growth.
That's what we're forecasting, and I think that's the message that I'm understanding by looking at our organic growth. And so, you know, we're not anticipating making big swings in, you know, staffing levels or infrastructure build programs and things, but we want to continue to monitor this just to get an idea, get a sense of whether or not we think this organic growth is going to change quite a bit, which is important for us to try to understand. You know, these lots that are and developments that are being put in place, they're not going to be built out in 1 year. They're going to be built out over time, right? So monitoring how those developments are being built out get us at least in the best position to be able to understand if something's changing ahead of us, so we can watch and figure out if something's changing so that we can respond to that. And we have a number of things that we can put in place to be able to respond to really quick spikes in growth. And we have some contingencies in place to be able to do that, but mainly just to be monitoring, yeah, what that long-term organic growth is, so we can make sure we site our infrastructure. As an example, you know, 31 average megawatts, that's an energy number. The actual peaks is a bit higher than that, but our infrastructure has to be able to handle what the peaks are. And our substations typically are about 28 megawatts, but all of that 31 average megawatts doesn't occur in one place. So it's being spread throughout the county. So trying to understand best where the developments are, making sure we stage that infrastructure at the right time. So you'll see a little bit of what we forecast the needs are in the map in the coming slides, and where we're at in our mainly substation build. So we have also got distribution related line builds that are happening that are consistent with the growth too, but they're spread throughout the county.
Chad, on that, if I can,
Chad, question.
So, Randy, we're going to get to you in just a second. Gary started.
On the question of having adequate resources, since we've got 13 new substations proposed, and I think the horizon on that is a 10-year horizon, is that about right?
Yep.
So 10-year horizon, 13 substations. Do we have the resources to be able to complete that? What that means is that in some years we're going to have more than one substation under construction. Do we have what we need in the way of manpower, woman power, you know, enough employees, as well as resources in-house to accomplish that task in 10 years?
That's a great question. And we are building out our project delivery group and our substation delivery group. We've got a lessons learned effort coming up here later this month for that substation build group. We assume we can have about three substations in various stages at any given point in time. So you'll see in the slides coming, we do actually have three substations. We know we can't build three with our current staffing at the exact same time and in the same phase, so energizing, you know, procurement, design, but we can have three ongoing at any given time. And so we're checking in on what our delivery is. We're setting schedules up to understand where and if we need to make adjustments so that we can keep up with that, and then it's being informed by what our needs are in the load forecast. So we're working on that question. It's a very good question. We're asking ourselves the same question. And so if we're seeing any changes that need to be made, then we'll bring those forward here in the coming weeks.
Great. Thank you.
Randy? Go ahead.
Yes. maybe you'll cover this in the substation, but maybe not. There's been a lot of anecdotal conversation about how COVID has changed the way people work. And the fact that we have a significant amount of what has historically been part-year homes in especially Chelan and Leavenworth Lake Wenatchee that are maybe more becoming more fully occupied. Does our forecast take into consideration, or do we need for it to take into consideration, any increased use of existing residential in the county? And if so, does it have that big of an impact?
Great question, Commissioner Smith. We are asking ourselves that question in the load forecast team. So we refer to that as end use changes. We recognize that there's a significant number of meters or buildings and homes in Chelan County that are not full time. We saw some anecdotal things this last winter that we peaked in some of our circuits that we don't normally peak at, and the peaks were higher. We're recognizing that there might be a shift in that use and trying to get a better understanding of that end use changes and how that might affect our infrastructure and our resource requirements. So it's an ongoing question. We did recognize some anecdotal things. Don't have an answer for you yet, but we are seeing differences there.
I would add that the district's investment in the advanced metering infrastructure is going to go a long ways to help us identify specific changes in end use, in particular residential meters that we would normally get one read a month on. We would be able to get upwards of 24 reads a day, so it'll help us understand where that shift is occurring. So we're excited about that.
That's a great point, Andy. At this point, we have the ability to be able to look in and trend at the substation level. We don't have the ability to be able to trend from the end use side of things. So really looking forward to that information and understanding how individual areas or groups or pockets or structures are using energy in a different way to help us understand how we might be able to stage things differently and might change our plans. That's a great point.
That's great, because I know just looking at my one little road, my one little street, the residential makeup has completely changed in the last 2 years, where it was probably 50-50 part-time people. Those part-time people are there much, much more than they were before. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
glad to hear that.
For sure. I'd like to come back to Commissioner Arsenal's question about staffing. And I think Chad covered that really well. We're really trying to keep a close eye on it. Just like to say, out of those 13 substations, and this slide kind of demonstrates it, but where we have acquired properties and then where we're still looking to acquire properties, and that's a big, big variable in our ability to respond to load growth and able to build the infrastructure. Chad and his team, you're great at acquisitions and designs and construction, but there's a real heavy lift associated with trying to locate a substation and go through the processes to ensure the communities are well accepting and understanding the need for that. So we're very active on those. In particular, we are very active in the West Wenatchee substation area right now. We have some properties. We looked at about 11 different sites, kind of from a 50,000 foot view, in a couple miles of our load center, and we've zeroed in on some properties, both the Washington State University Tree Fruit Research Center, as well as the Wenatchee School District has properties in that particular area that we would like to do a further feasibility on. So we're working on agreements for us to be able to kind of step in and take a look at some of those properties. I'll be hearing a little bit more about those. In addition, looking at the Roses and Dry Lake area up there in Manson, that's an area where we've seen a big increase in demand for energy kind of throughout the year, not just vacation anymore. So there's a lot going on in there.
Howard Flats out at the airport in Chelan. We anticipate some significant growth in that particular area. And then as well as in Kashmir, we mentioned Mission Ridge and down in that Stamilt Hill area, kind of on the outskirts of Malaga. So there's a lot going on. We all know that siting substations can take us, you know, in some cases 3 years just to anchor down on the property. So we're blessed to have participating agencies like Chelan County in as a partner to help us try to identify locations that work for everybody. They too have properties that they've offered us to look at, and other private and public entities that know we're looking for properties have come forward. And so I'm not going to say it's getting easy, but people are much more aware of the need for citing this, and there's more of a partnership view. So we appreciate that.
So every year we're running a forecast, trying to look a ways out there and what larger infrastructure we're going to need, mainly substations. There's associated transmission line and distribution improvements associated with each one of these. But the year needed there, again, I'll go back to the load forecast and what the actual loads are. So we're always adjusting these dates. I think what's most important is our understanding right now of what our sequence is and the sequence. So right now we're active in North Shore and Bavarian. North Shore is about to go into construction. Well, next spring we'll go into construction procurements. We're heavy in procurement right now. Bavarian's in permitting and design. It's probably lagging North Shore, assuming all goes as planned. Bavarian's about 6 months behind it. Wenatchee Substation, we've acquired property from Wenatchee Substation. We've begun our conceptual designs on that. We'll be moving into design as soon as we move out of design on the Bavarian phase. So those three are really active in our current substation build team, are active in those three areas. Based on what the load growths are, we may change the sequence around a little bit. We started some discussions about potentially moving Wenatchee up in the schedule and looking at downtown Wenatchee, given the developments that are going on, so we might do some resequencing. Then we're looking at Castle Rock, and PUD has acquired property for that a number of years ago. And we're working on, as Andy mentioned, in West Wenatchee to try to make sure that we have infrastructure in place to be able to serve some of the planned growth that are going on in kind of that northwestern Wenatchee area. We talked about Gorge Substation and Stamilt. So these list of substation that we've identified, I like to say that I think we know, we do have a really good handle on what we're going to need and where it's going to be needed. We have less less confidence around the when part, and that's why it's important for us to constantly be doing our load forecasting and understanding. So I would encourage and promote that we are identifying these sites early as we can and trying to secure properties as when it makes sense for us, knowing that the infrastructure at some point in time will be needed, and then we're staged and ready and informed the community of what our plans are long range, and then the growth can occur around it and actually identify the schedule of the substation builds. Any questions on this list? We're redoing this list every spring, trying to inform what our substation build team should be doing, and then our site acquisition team should be doing. We have two separate teams, a lot of the same players, but we have two separate teams that are moving each one of those forward. So
I guess I would just note the last column is transmission required. Not every new substation requires significant transmission. We try to locate them as close to proximity as existing transmission lines as possible. But you can see down in that column, there's a few of them that do require them, or at least we know that require them. As an example, the Mission Ridge substation. If and when we are siting a substation, it's going to be up somewhere up there towards, you know, the Forest Ridge and that upper Squilchuck area. We would need to bring 115,000 volt transmission line from the valley floor up up to the new substation location. So that's a significant investment. There's significant permitting and right-of-way acquisition that would occur there. In fact, on that particular one, likely significantly more effort than siting the substation itself just to get the transmission, high-voltage transmission in that particular area. So we don't want to lose sight of the importance of making that transmission connection on these substations as well.
So I covered most of these, I think, so I'll just go through this quickly. These are the various substation activities that are in progress right now. I mentioned North Shore, Bavarian, Leavenworth area, and Wenatchee. We talked about the Foothills site acquisition that's going on. We are about to start more activities somewhere in Malaga, Basis to Milt. And then I think it's important to note, too, that there are things beyond just new substation facilities that are occurring, too. We're rehabbing, refurbing, and adding capacity to several substations, and I list a few of them there where we're doing upgrades and capacity improvements and refurbishments on. So lots of substation activity that's ongoing.
For those of you that are living or traveling or commuting into the Chelan Valley, you'll see our crews actively constructing a new distribution circuit out of the South Shore substation. It's right along the highway, just as you come out of Knapp's Coulee to the lake, you'll see crews performing both underground and overhead construction. The overhead construction is through an existing private property orchard, which is anticipated to be converted to underground in the future as that property develops. But, throughout the next 8 weeks, you'll see active construction on the South Shore for that third, what we call the South Shore third feeder. That's relieving a little bit of pressure from demand on the South Shore. And then Chad's North Shore substation, when it comes into service, it will also relieve pressure on that South Shore and the entire Chelan City proper area.
Did you say Chad's North Station?
Chad's North
That's
Shore
what
substation,
I just
right.
wanted to make sure I was clear on that.
If it's successful, it's all of ours. If it's not, it's Chad's.
I see. Thank you.
Maybe just a little bit of a wrap-up. Lots of development and things that are going on. Like I said, we anticipate that the actual builds and the loads will occur over time within those developments. We're thinking we're sustaining new growth in residential meters for the next several years. Talked about our substation and infrastructure investments and when we're planning on putting those in, and we'll be monitoring what actually occurs and what our capabilities are also to reinform those schedules and timelines. The new large loads, like I said, we have policies, thanks to the board and others who have put those new policies in place so that these large loads have infrastructure requirements that are attached to them so that we don't have to necessarily be controlling those in the organic type growth. So those are connected to specific infrastructure projects. We feel at this point we're positioned well to be able to meet the load growth. And like I said, we have some contingencies in place. Talked a little bit about the organic load growth and things and the work that we're performing and how we're using that forecast to schedule our infrastructure improvements and staffing needs. So just want to say thanks to the board for the support and the substation site acquisition and upgrading our substations and adding the infrastructure. Really appreciate board's support for that.
Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Just my comment is that was a great presentation to the two of you. Very clear, really calls to mind everything that's going on in Chelan County, and we need that reminder on a regular basis, so thank you.
You guys have your hands full. There's a lot of things going on in the next 10 years and certainly beyond that. I think this is a moving target. It appears to me the growth is going to continue beyond that 10-year window. So you guys are going to be really busy. Yeah, I hope to see you back here a lot and get more exciting updates. Good job.
I was just going to add, it's you spoke to some of it today, but the interesting part about it is this is in essence, an average load growth that we're experiencing in the organic side of things, as they termed it. The challenge is a lot of our existing assets and infrastructure are reaching that point where they, you know, we would normally be able to accommodate this with not as much infrastructure going forward, but our existing assets are getting to the point where they're reaching that planning replacement, or not replacement, but addition phase. And so now there's a lot of infrastructure that comes around with an average annual load growth that we normally don't experience. And then we'll figure out how to accommodate the additional piece besides the organic piece, because that's a big impact to our county, these additional large loads that are coming in. And so these two are going to figure out how to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, great guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Let's move into Fifth Street redevelopment and bring up Dan Frazier.
Morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services here. This is our fourth visit on this topic over the last few months. It's been a great process to go through and evaluating what comes after Chelan PUD on this site. And so today we're actually getting to some action. So the So today's presentation will be a little bit of a recap of the RFP process. We'll summarize a little bit of the feedback we've received through these public meetings and other public venues. We will ask for a motion from the commission to approve the recommendation of the group, and then we'll move on to next steps and say what's coming up. And before we get started, I do want to recognize that this has been a great group effort. We've had great partnership with the Port of Chelan County, with the Chamber of Commerce, with the City of Wenatchee, and with the Wenatchee Downtown Association. And there's some members of those groups here today that show support for this recommendation. So when we talk about the recommendation made to the board, it's really the recommendation of that group. A lot of work went into this process, a lot of discussion, and we stand behind very firmly that this is the right direction to move forward with this property. So make sure everybody understands this is a team effort, and we're going to continue through that process. So just to recap, this is the Reader's Digest version. We did issue a solicitation back in March for an RFP. We did tours, multiple tours with interested developers. On May 16th, we opened proposals. We received four of them. We went through an evaluation process, and that group I mentioned before had two lengthy meetings discussing the proposals. That eventually culminated in a shortlist recommendation. We did not know if that was the direction we were going to head when we started this. We didn't know if there'd be one clear winner or if there was going to be a need to further evaluate. And that's where this group came down. We think there was a strong two contenders for the best proposal, and we just wanted to be able to ask those proposers to give us additional information to really allay some of our questions that just couldn't be answered in the abbreviated proposal window that we provided. So we then had a community advisory meeting, and that was the group that was initially assembled back in 2019 and into 2020 that participated in the visioning process that we went through for this site. So a lot of input from local businesses, local property owners, as to what the site could be. As far as the impact to downtown could be substantial, positive or negative. We wanted to make sure we stayed on the positive side of that. So we re-engaged with that group, and they evaluated those proposals and provided feedback as to what they would like to see and what we think as a group we'd like to see that those proposers provide us additional information. So a lot of questions, a lot of please detail what this means in terms of your proposal. So that group met in June, and then we've come to the PUD Commission for three meetings. This is being the fourth. We just gave an overview. We provided the recommendation, and then there was a review meeting and a community feedback meeting on July 5th, where we had quite a few speakers came and presented to the board. A lot of valuable information that came from that process, including the two proposers that are shortlisted, both provided information. So that was really good to hear. One, that they're still interested, We have long processes here in the public sector. We want to make sure we have good public input, and we like to make sure that our partners are along for the ride. So it was really good to hear that they are definitely still interested in the process. So that's the process up through to today. So some of the things, and this is not an exhaustive list by any stretch of the imagination, but we did get feedback from various sources. As I spoke to the customer advisory group, public comment at the board meeting, and then we had quite a few emailed comments. I sent out a couple weeks ago the compiled list of those comments from the public. In general, the comments were good. They liked the idea of incorporation of those visioning documents. What could be on this site, and how can this be a positive for Wenatchee and the downtown area? It was most of the things proposed were complementary to downtown and not in competition with what's downtown, so that was very important as we went through this process. And there's a lot of comments about increased vehicular circulation on this site. So it's a pretty deep site. You know, if you compare it to the rest of downtown, this is like a block and a half wide. So having some internal circulation, and both of the proposers provided that, was a very positive. Some other things that were questions, requested information. Some of it was a very vague in terms of what kind of architecture we're looking at. Nice big blocks of buildings, but no detail. So we really need to know what seven stories in Wenatchee on the downtown looks like. So definitely more architectural details, more renderings. And then a lot about phasing. So there's a concern about having the property sit for any length of time. You don't want this to be somewhat of an eyesore or nothing happening on the site. So how would the developers phase and schedule that work? Some of it about around feasibility. There were some good ideas that caused those of us that have been around the Wenatchee economic scene for a long time who said, really, is that feasible? Some of these ideas, maybe they are. We just want to make sure that what they're proposing is doable and that it's somewhat proposed in relation to what's happening economically now. Are these proposals, would they change anything with what's happened over the last few months in the economy? So that's a really good line of questioning. Proposers. And then additional stakeholder outreach. We definitely heard from a couple of very concerned stakeholders in the Valley at the meeting on the 5th, and we want to make sure that these developers are reaching out, having those meetings, getting a good understanding of how to work with those stakeholders and the greater community at large. And then there's some additional information about proposed uses. This kind of goes back to the feasibility. Are these proposed uses going to work in Wenatchee? There's some question about the quantity of some of the proposed uses, and I think we heard from one of the developers who said, it was a bit of a stab in the dark in terms of just trying to fill out the site, but they'll do more analysis as it comes into getting that final proposal. So with that, the next step would be to actually officially shortlist these two developers, and so we have a motion prepared to that, and this is based on the recommendation of the committee.
Great. You'd mentioned there are some additional people here. Do you have anything that you have would like to have individual share? Or?
Anybody like to speak? I see a lot of no's.
A lot of familiar faces, so welcome and thanks for being here today.
I'd be happy to answer any questions, of course, before we have a motion, if that's something answered.
Well, I really appreciate our partners that have been helping us move this project forward. As we vacate, everybody has a stake in this, and everybody wants what's best for Wenatchee, so I really appreciate all the efforts of our different organizations and partners and feedback from community commissioners.
You, Steve, you had been at one of our previous meetings, and you've been very attentive. Is there anything that you would like to say or that the YMCA would like to say before the resolution is read or that any votes are taken? Okay. Downtown Association have anything to want to? Okay. Great. I really appreciate you. Personally, as one commissioner, I appreciate you guys coming today. And, Steve, the fact you've been here numerous times shows your tenacity and your importance on this project. So thank you.
So, commissioners, are we ready for a motion, or do you want, we can have some discussion at that point?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to propose a motion to approve the recommendations of the Fifth Street Redevelopment Evaluation Team to shortlist Steinhauer Property, Inc. and GTS Development, LLC for further development and evaluation of their proposals for the Fifth Street PUD Campus Redevelopment Project.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Dennis, are you there?
Yeah, I was on mute, so the vote was aye.
Okay. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes. Dan, thank you very much.
Commissioners, just have a one more slide here, just kind of recap where we'll be going over the next few months. So this was the August 1st board action. I appreciate the motion to move forward with the shortlisted developers. So through August and September, we're going to work with those developers to ask those questions that we heard from the feedback process. And then we will have an evaluation process, which two commissioners are going to be part of. The developers will provide a presentation, and we'll have a Q&A period, so we can have some commissioner involvement in the evaluation and selection process. Then we would come back in the October-November timeframe, present that evaluation material, and request board action for final selection. And when that selection is complete, we would then negotiate both the purchase and sale agreement and the development agreement. And the development agreement is really, it's the meat and potatoes of what gets done on the site and how the PUD assures that some of these concerns are dealt with in terms of what's the requirement, especially performance requirements. I think we can really address the concerns regarding a site left vacant or a site left where it's not actively being developed. So, and then we would bring those back to the board for approval sometime in the first quarter of 2020. All subject to how quickly we can negotiate these things. And they do take time.
Great. Thank you, Dan.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Number five, Puget Power Sales Agreement Update.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Janet Jaspers. I'm the Director of Energy Planning and Trading. I'm here giving the presentation this morning, but we've really had a team of people working on this. From legal, we've had Rob Davis and Charles Von Reese from Energy Planning and Trading, Mike Bradshaw and Sean Smith, and from middle office side. Is a big team working on this, not just myself. Okay. So why we're here today, just wanted to inform the board about highlights of the draft First Amendment to the 2006 Puget Power Sales Agreement. We're planning on coming back to the board around August 15th, depending on how the negotiations are going, if we can kind of finalize and wrap up. Today's presentation is just an update and to inform the board, and no action is required today. So back in 2006, Chelan and Puget entered into that long-term power sales contract. It was really for a 25% share of the output of Rocky Reach and Rock Island systems. The term began in 2011, and it ends in 2031. So back in 2006, we had our little crystal ball. It wasn't very good. We knew that someday there would really be a future value for carbon-free attribute or carbon-free versus coal generation at that time. there is really no distinction between carbon-free or natural gas generation or coal generation. But we did have enough foresight to put a provision into the contract that said, okay, sometime before the term of the contract, there is really going to be some value for this carbon-free quality of hydropower. We really don't know what that's going to be right now, but when it happens, we can have a fair and equitable allocation of that future value. So, kind of fast forward to today, we have a couple of recent legislative regulations that have been adopted by the state of Washington. Other states really have regulations too that kind of increase the value of the carbon-free attribute of our hydro generation. So the first is the Clean Energy Transformation Act, and it becomes effective January 1st of 2022. And back late last year, we did come to the board at that time. We had passed or we adopted a Clean Energy Implementation Plan. It had some renewable targets. Puget also had to do the same thing, so they do have some renewable targets that having carbon-free power helps them with. The second legislation was Climate Commitment Act, or CCA. Some people call it Cap and Invest. It becomes effective January 1st, 2023, and it also really has led to higher value or higher premium on carbon-free power. So this amendment really is the result of a pretty lengthy negotiation, kind of beginning probably in about 2013, 2014. We started to kind of see something, there was no transparency in the market. Some of these regulations really hadn't been adopted yet. Then in 2018, I think we're kind of coming a little bit closer. We saw some cap and trade or cap and invest in California saw a little bit more value. But it wasn't really until CETA and Climate Commitment Act that really made a much higher demand for carbon-free in the state of Washington. Highlights of the amendment to that power sales contract that was executed in 2006. The words of the contract were a fair and equitable allocation of that. So when we started negotiating with Puget, we decided 50-50 was really fair and equitable. Then it kind of came down to the value, or the volume, I'm sorry. So we had actually talked about actual volumes that we could transfer to them or pay on just kind of average water. And we ended on actual volumes of generation, not just a average water generation volume. Pricing was kind of a difficult one. And still, there's very little transparency. There's not really a carbon curve. And so we used a couple of pricing points to make sure that the pricing is competitive. We're still kind of in negotiations on that, haven't kind of agreed on the value yet. Payment for the environmental attributes is really in addition to cost. So the whole power sales contract as a payment stream that we're currently capturing. And so we're still going to be delivering the same amount of energy to Puget. Puget is still going to be paying these costs of production plus a couple others. And so this payment is going to be in addition to all of those.
Janet, may I ask a question?
Sure.
So what will be the nature of that payment? I understand the cost already being paid by Puget. Could you explain the nature of the payment for environmental attributes? What would those payments be?
And mostly the Clean Energy Transformation Act, in order for Puget to comply with that, they're going to need kind of a renewable energy credit. So it's kind of a paper certificate that comes with the power. So and we call it, we deliver a bundled product. And so it's not just like if you were getting delivered power from a coal plant, but then you bought just a paper certificate from a solar plant. So it's kind of a bundled environmental attribute comes with the megawatt hour itself. And so there's a new tracking or existing tracking system called Regis that enabled the creation of these renewable energy credits associated with the clean hydropower. And so every month we'll have generation at Rocky Reach, and we upload all of that, what each unit generates, into that tracking system. And then we can create a renewable energy credit for each megawatt hour of generation. And in that system, we can then transfer those renewable energy credits to Puget, and they can use it for their compliance to for any of these programs.
So they're paying for the processing of that, of it, basically.
They're paying, really. We've decided to split the value. So they're kind of the premium that is associated with the carbon-free attribute of the power is what they're paying for. And we have never transferred them yet to this point renewable energy credits, but we are going to as part of this amendment. So they're going to be able to kind of, like you have a registered puppy, not just a plain puppy. So you have the piece of paper that actually says it's a carbon-free that you would need to prove compliance to those regulations. Does that make sense?
Maybe. I'll stew on it for a while.
Commissioner, maybe I can help. It's a cash value payment. If they were buying energy alone and it was not didn't come with the EAs or the specified source bundling, then it might be $50. But if if it comes with that extra attribute, maybe it's $60. Then we get to split that $10.
Right.
Does that help?
So I'm looking at what their costs are, not what they're paying for.
There's no power. So they pay a cost plus contract. Their costs don't change. They pay the same cost they've always paid, including the same cost that Alcoa paid, for example.
Right.
Those don't change as part of this deal. The only thing that changes is an agreement as to how we would value and split any extra that they get.
All right. I just misunderstood the statement about costs.
Those all continue.
So the capital recovery charge and the debt
all stays the same. Correct.
The debt reduction costs, those stay the same.
Uh-huh. Kelly somewhere is just giddy with joy that you remembered CRC and DRC.
Can I just ask maybe that, Rebecca, maybe we'd make a note for our next workshop in terms of a topic of education. I'd really like to dive deeper into the environmental attributes and carbon credits and try to understand that, because in my simple brain right now, I'm sure I don't have any clues to how it works, but it seems to me that in the old days, you paid for kilowatt. And now that you're still paying for that kilowatt, but because of the carbon-free and basically the legislation has made the carbon-free environmental attributes have value that didn't have value before. Now you can create this environmental attribute because it is carbon-free. Somewhere in there, there's a certification of that. And that creates additional value to that kilowatt. I'd like to really truly understand that. I don't have my hands around that, but I see as the future evolves, we're going to have more revenue that the value of that is very likely could increase, which means value to the district. And I'd like to understand it better than I do. So maybe that could be a workshop topic.
Yeah, it'd be a great workshop topic. There's a lot of these, this is all new, and a lot of these attributes are just getting to the point where there's able to be a value placed on them. It used to be a kilowatt was a kilowatt, and now it's not.
Right.
So it would be a good workshop topic.
Thank you.
That and threw in resource adequacy as well. I'm just, maybe. That would be a different topic, but.
But a good one.
Yeah.
Randy, did I see your hand go up? Or, no. No. Okay.
No, no, you did not.
Okay.
So for next steps, so hopefully on August 15th, we're going to be coming back. We'll have a resolution that would enable the general manager to execute the first amendment to the 2006 power, future power sales agreement. And then after that, if the resolution is approved, the general manager could go ahead and execute the amendment. Any questions?
Dennis.
Yeah, Janet or Eric. So this is going forward. It's not a retro adjustment. Is that correct?
It is a little bit retro. And so because the Clean Energy Transformation Act really is effective January 1st, 2022, we will go back to January 1st, 2022, and the payment for those renewable energy credits will happen back to January 1st.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Dennis. Okay, anything else? Great. Janet, thank you for the presentation.
Yeah,
thanks, Janet.
Good job.
Next, we have Michelle Smith giving us an update on our due diligence for Confluence Parkway. Welcome, Michelle.
I have to make all these adjustments for short people. Good morning. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing. I do want to note that on the phone, I believe, Laura Gloria, the Executive Services Director from the City of Wenatchee, and their consultant, Nelson Davis, he's a civil engineer with KPG, are also on the phone. So my goal today is to give you a brief update on Confluence Parkway, specifically today. I thought it'd be really useful to share this graphic that we've recently received from the city. And their engineers pulled this together. So this is going to show you basically everything that currently is being proposed in terms of walls and berms along the bench, along the railroad. So I thought it'd be really helpful to maybe share this. And again, this is what's being proposed currently. If you have any questions, I do have their engineer on the phone to help answer anything specific. So I'm going to try and make this as big as I can and walk through it. This is Holly here. Of course, the railroad you can see here. So as Holly, as the trail enters the Holly Street, the Horan area is over here. And the KPQ towers are in this area here. So as you walk, as a roadway is being proposed along here, you might recall we're proposing to put the trail inward, so off of Holly Street and inward into more of the Confluence Park area, the Horan area here. So this is where the trail is going, if you can see my hand moving here. So the first berm, it's 4-foot earth, vegetated earth berm, will be right here. As you continue to go a little bit further here, we've talked a lot about the pinch point, the southern pinch point. So just beyond this first berm, which will separate the trail from the roadway, it's being proposed that this next pinch point area, I'm going to come down to the graphics now. So let me back up. The first berm, as you can see, the roadway will be here. There's two travel lanes, 11 feet wide, with a 5-foot on each side bike lane. You'll have a 4-foot earthen berm with vegetation, a little bit of a separation here, and then you'll have the loop trail. When you get to the pinch point, and again, we call this the southern pinch point because there's a northern pinch point as well, it gets pretty narrow in there. So now the trail is going to be coming closer to the road. So this is where the area we've had most concern, right? We've been looking at how can you best still have a trail route through here that you don't feel like you have cars too close and you have a separation. So in this area is where they're proposing to have a what they call a traffic sound barrier. So there'll be a wall, not a berm, but a traffic wall. And then they are also proposing to drop the trail 4 feet for an effective 8-foot separation from the roadway. So there'll be basically a boardwalk in this area. And it's not a long distance, but it's I think, Justin, do we figure about 400 feet? There'll be this boardwalk with this combination of sound wall and the lowered walkway. Okay, so that's running through that south pinch point.
Michelle, can right we here. Go back to the first picture?
Absolutely. There we go.
And the engineer is with us today.
Nelson, do we have you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning, Nelson. Hi. Thanks for being with us. What? Two questions. On the bike path up by the cars, is there a curb? In other words, are those bikes up on a sidewalk type thing, or is it a painted line along next to the cars?
It is a painted line along next to the cars is what's currently proposed out there.
Great. And then on the berm right there that depicts with the tree, what keeps a car from veering off and going over the top of that and down? I mean, is that still a possibility right in there?
You know, driver behavior can be pretty unpredictable, but it's unlikely. It's a 4-foot high berm, relatively steep slope, so somebody would really have to be erratic to do that. It's very unlikely.
Or an accident, possibly.
Or an accident.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for...
Michelle, can I just ask, how wide is the trail, particularly at the pitch point where the boardwalk area is? Mm-hmm. How, the width on that?
It's showing here 12 feet. Is that correct, Nelson?
Yeah, it's 12 feet. In general, we have 2-foot shoulders on the general trail, not necessarily at the pinch point. We'll have a little extra space for clear space. So it's effectively 16 feet to allow the railing and a little clear space away from that wall.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is...
Not only a 12-foot trail, 2-foot shoulder, so it's effectively a 16-foot trail.
The reason I ask that, Nelson, is this weekend I was at Pybus and watching mostly young people on combinations of motorized skateboards. I think they were electric. And right. and also the little scooters that were whipping around on that trail pretty darn quick. And the thought occurred to me is, you know, would the pinch point become a potential problem for people and kids that are doing that? And, you know, for the pedestrians that would be walking on there. And I don't know the answer to that. I was rather shocked to see how quick those things move. They really go quick. and even the one that I saw was, like I said, on the trail, and there were pedestrians on the trail trying to jump out of the way of these kids. So just a thought that perhaps if there's a way to even put a line on there that the kids might follow, at least being in a certain side of the trail and not necessarily mingling with the pedestrians. That might just be a thought. I just throw that out there for thought.
I think we have a question hand raised by Laura from the city. Are you there, Laura?
Good morning. Yes, good morning. Thank you, commissioners. Just wanted to add a little bit of more information, and then this might help not necessarily address, but at least provide more information on the thing about scooters. So as Nelson mentioned, along Confluence Parkway, the bike lanes, there is no sidewalk there. And the reason that that is because it is the hope that someone that was using a bicycle who was not comfortable riding on the road could get on the loop trail. So in essence, we are providing two separate modes of transportation. So if you are a road biker who feels comfortable, you know, using the street pathway, you absolutely can go down Confluence Parkway. If you are someone that maybe has, you know, smaller children or are not as comfortable on the street, then you could take the Apple Capitol Loop Trail. And so that will provide a little bit of relief from just the loop trail by providing those additional modes. The rest of Confluence Parkway does include sidewalks, so south of kind of Holly Street, and then north once you get past Confluence State Park, that sort of Confluence State Park area. So where it is basically adjacent to the Apple Capitol Loop Trail, it does not include sidewalks because it's, you know, the intention that a user would stay on the loop trail. But again, there's still that additional opportunity to use the road if a user feels so comfortable to do so.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Thanks, Laura. So as we continue on down, we have a continued earth and berm, vegetative earth and berm, that's 4 feet, that will continue to separate from the trail from the roadway, as they're showing here. There is, in this point, this is where we're starting to get towards the north pinch point. Let's see, which is, this one here. So you can see here there's a retaining wall. So there, again, we get, for those of you who have been out there on this trail, there's certain areas where the bench kind of gets really narrow. So where they can put in the berm, there'll be this berm and a separation, and then the trail. Of course, there's some overlook areas that they're proposing to add in for education and interpretation of the Haran area and the cultural aspects. But there is this another narrowing here that we call the northern pinch point. So in this area, they're still proposing the 4-foot vegetative berm, but there will also be a retaining wall to kind of hold everything in place there and to be able to get that 12-foot trail through there.
And Michelle, I'd like to point out that last segment, basically the trail at the south end of that will be fairly close to roadway grade, and that's where the retaining wall gets taller as you move toward the Wenatchee River, because we're dropping the grade of the trail down, you know, nearly 20 feet to go in the lower bridge.
Thank you, Nelson. And it's my understanding, Nelson, I'm glad you chimed in right there, that as you start approaching the new bridge, the wall will gradually get taller, right? So what I was reading is up to almost 20 feet in some areas as you approach the bridge.
Yes, and the reason for that is we'll have the new Apple Capitol Loop Trail Bridge below the roadway bridge. So the bridge deck is up above, and in order to provide the clearances below for the Apple Capitol Loop Trail and the bridge structure itself, it's going to be, you know, approximately 20 feet lower and still adjacent to the roads. So there's the need for that trail. So at some point it transitions from a berm with a wall below it to just a wall as the trail goes underneath the new bridge.
And then once you have crossed the bridge and you get to the north side of Confluence Park, it's kind of faint back here, but you can see this is the camp area. The 4-foot earthen berm will be continued along this area to create that separation from the roadway of the trail in the park area where it joins back up to the existing trail here in this tan color portion. Any other questions about this? I thought it was really kind of helpful for me to see all these discussions we've been having, to kind of see it all in one spot. I appreciate Nelson and Laura's willingness to put this together for us. And at this point, we're continuing to work through the NEPA process with the other stakeholders, the other agencies, tribes, and the public. And we're continuing to provide comments, so I appreciate all the input the board has given so far.
Michelle, the yellow line here, is that?
Right here.
Does that track with the existing trail?
Yes, so where the yellow line is basically the existing trail. So this is going to come off of the bridge here, and then it'll kick right into the existing trail route.
And then at this point, the north farthest end, has yet to be developed.
Are you talking about this piece over here? So
all the way to highway, towards Highway 2. I didn't know if any more work had been done on that or if we're still, you know, the plan is still at the same spot that it was before. Just curious.
So are you, Commissioner, are you talking about beyond the trail or the park? So basically the connection to Otabashian, or are you talking specifically within the park at where the entrance?
No, all the way down to, I'm curious how the road comes down across the railroad tracks, the entrance to the park, and all the way down to Highway 2.
Nelson, do you want to talk sure. about the progress on that?
Yeah, we're currently working with BNSF on kind of refining the modifications to those existing rail crossings, but in general, the plan is that there's been no changes to the plan for the purpose of the NEPA document. But as we go forward with final design, we'll need to gain input from and approval from BNSF to make that crossing.
Because right now the road there between the ESD and the service center is closed, is planned to be closed, that crossing?
Correct, on Old Station Road there, yes.
Okay.
I see
a hand up.
Go ahead, Nelson.
I just saw a hand up if there's another question on that.
Dennis, thank you.
Michelle or Nelson, at some point we will be connecting this trail that we're discussing now with the development of the south end of our service center property. And where does that connect in and how does it connect in?
Yeah, so you can see... really, the confluence improvements will terminate at Confluence Parkway. So at the north end of the Wenatchee River Bridge, you see the trail kind of pooching out.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So the city's project, the Confluence Parkway project, will actually terminate under the bridge. And we've been coordinating with your engineer and your staff there for that connection point. To make sure the grades line up and we can make that connection. But everything west of Confluence Parkway will be part of that other project that you all are
working
on. You bet.
Thanks.
Randy? No. Okay. You're faking me out when you go like this. I don't know if you're trying to get my attention. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Michelle.
And Lauren, see.
Nelson.
Thanks
Nelson
for having us.
And Nathan. Nelson.
All right. Mind block
there. Thanks, great. Nelson.
Thanks, Michelle.
All right. At this time, we will open it up for public comment.
My name is Danny Gold. I'm a hydro mechanic.
Danny.
Oh, you can't hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay. My name is Danny Gold. I'm a hydro mechanic with the Generation Department, Rock Island right now. I've worked at Rocky Reach over the years. I've been here for about 30 years. And I have a lot of experience in a lot of different things. I've had a lot of great opportunities. I've done a lot of fun work, worked with a lot of great people. And with that being said, safety's been a big part of our culture at the hydros and looking out for one another. And Kirk, besides talking to the board today, I wanted to address you a little bit. The concern with the email that you sent out on the 21st, talking about top quartile, and the restructure, I guess, that you're doing with safety, it doesn't sit well with a lot of us in Generation down on the ground floor. And the concern is that you're removing yourself from safety and putting layers in between safety and the top of the company and having it answer to somebody who's not in the top tier. You know, Tony Nelson with Central Maintenance, you're creating a subordinate type situation, having Jessica Schwab answer to Tony. When if she is, even though she's the interim, if she's going to be the person, she needs to answer to the top, not be buffered. So by the time it gets here, it's put how it needs to be put, and not for you to see the truth and what the people really feel down on the floor. Okay, so in my time here, I don't see you guys out there without an entourage of people, okay? So I see you having to be very pointed on what you get to say, who gets to talk to you, and how deep they get to go in conversation with you. If we had it our way out there, you guys would show up, and you'd be able to talk to us. Like you would put in, Ann, let's say you wanted to put in a request to go to Rock Island Dam and get on the project, talk to the people. Then you would say, hey, I want to meet with Danny Gold out there and have him walk me around. That's it. You show up out there, you meet me, or Steve, you meet me, or Gary, you meet me, or Andy Hilliard, or anybody out there who has familiarity with the project. Doesn't have to be me, but with people on the ground floor, so there's no buffer. You just get to come talk to the people and find out what's going on, right? If you're going to harbor a true culture of safety, it's from the ground all the way to the top, and there's no secrecy. There's no backdoor deals. There's no side gimmicks. There's nothing. It's all about being straight with one another, being transparent, right? We have a set of core values we go by, safety being number one, right? With that move that we've made, that you and your directors have made, doesn't put safety as number one in that core value. So I would say we need to reevaluate that. And then you have stewardship and trustworthiness.
Operational, you know, excellence.
Yeah, operational excellence. I don't know how we can achieve any of those by not having safety be the guideline and the lead in this across our company. Okay? So I've spoke with many people on this, and this just didn't come up today or last week on the 21st, okay? This is a concern that many of us over the years have had here. And like I say, I've been here for 30 years, so I have a ton of experience in the way of seeing a lot of change, right? Some of it good, some of it not so good. Some of it done well, some of it not done so well, okay? So with that being said, some of the stuff you see, I hate to say this, but it's, you know, the information I'm gathering from my people that I work with, it's reminiscent of the old days where Charlie Hoskins was in control, okay? And he would bring that good old boy system to the plate, to the table, okay? And that doesn't sit well with people, really. I mean, I don't even think it's sat well with you over the years either, Kirk. I understand that. But that's what we're seeing, what we feel like we're seeing, right? The perception is that safety's taken a back seat to special interests and being driven from another direction, okay? So with that being said, I've taken information from a lot of folks from Rocky Reach, Rock Island, downtown folks who are brave enough to give the information, right? A lot of folks in this communication over the years are afraid to come forward. Either they don't have the courage or they just don't, that's not their style. They don't want to talk to anybody about it. But they're afraid of the retaliation that is potentially there on them. They're afraid of being the intimidation and maybe the bullying that steers them away. Now, whether that be from the top or from leadership in different bands across the district, right? I'm not privy to sit down and be with every little nook and cranny of this district and see who's saying what and doing what, right? From a leadership standpoint, that's out of my lane. I take care of my business and my people down at Rock Island, and we make sure we're safe. We look out for each other. We do the job, get the work done, and we have a good time doing it, right? And we do it the best we can. That's everybody comes to work in one piece and then wants to go home in one piece, right? And that's the goal. So I guess to close it, and make this not a long presentation, I have a 7-page deal here of information that I've gathered that I'll give each of you so that you can have it. So I guess in the end, what's the goal here? The goal would be to get help from you folks in the commissioner seats to get on the ground floor and talk to the people and find out what's going on. There's quite a disturbance, and the disturbance is directly down to this. You have two people in safety with Rhonda Wilkinson and Pete Johnson, who are the most outstanding people safety's ever hired here. Okay, you guys did a wonderful job hiring those people. They're the best people we've seen in this district. Not only from being able to communicate with people and have that personal level, right, like we're doing right here today, being able to talk and communicate and get out there what's going on. These guys have the pedigree. They have the background. They know what they're doing. They know the rules. They know the laws. They know the regulations. Okay? They've been effectively removed from their positions. Nobody knows why. Okay, that's a secret. That shouldn't be a secret. That's, for us down here on our level, that's a giant red flag waving at everybody, right? What just happened to the best deal the PUD's ever had with Rhonda Wilkinson? I mean, in her pedigree, you know, she's got a degree. She's got a bachelor's degree in occupational safety and health. She has 28 years experience doing it. The professionalism she brings to the table and the ability to communicate with people, nobody's ever been able to do it before, right? Pete Johnson, he's a little bit more of a bulldog, but I'm telling you guys, his heart and his desire to make this the best place in regard to safety, you're not going to find anybody better than him, okay? And they have effectively been removed from their position in safety, and that is of great concern to us. We want to know why. Okay, what are the inner workings of how that happened? Why, to us, the perception from where we stand, Pete and Rhonda were put under the gun, the eyeball, if you will, the microscope, several months back from some people inside safety who were jealous of their ability to correspond with people, and they didn't share the same vision that was being driven by Rhonda. So from what we see, from what we gather, and this is based on perception, okay, is that we didn't like it, we're jealous of it, we're going to do something about it. So we're going to start poking the bear, and we're going to figure out a way to let Kirk know and anybody else up above who might know at the time, Steve Wright. Rhonda was put on an extended probationary period. The district had a third party come in, do an investigation, and from the way we understand, found nothing against Pete or Rhonda. Basically was frivolous information given against them. And like I say, this is from the perception on the ground, because we weren't given any information to see this closed. There was no follow-through on that. So when you see these guys be ousted, it's unwarranted as far as we're concerned. And like I say, in the 30 years I've been here, we're not even close to anybody in a position of safety that can match these two. Okay, so me personally, along with many of my coworkers, they want to know what's going on, what's driving this. Okay, so with that being said, I'll just close it by saying we need your help. We at least, at the very least, need you guys to investigate this, okay? And, Kirk, just between you and me here, I have no hard feelings against you. This isn't like a personal attack. This is just me bringing information and being real with you from my standpoint, but also being the one to go ahead and come here and let everybody know that this is what the ground floor thinks, Rhett. We don't think we're being too out of control by making a request for us to get to what the true light on this is. So with that being said.
Get a copy of that?
Yes, sir.
Danny, thanks for coming and visiting with us. Personnel issues in a public arena are always sensitive, and we will take the matter under advisement, and safety is our top value and priority as well. Ann?
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. So thank you very much for your time, you guys.
Thank you, Danny.
Appreciate you coming.
Danny, don't leave. I have some comments.
Oh, okay.
Okay, if you would.
Yeah.
So, first of all, thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Takes courage. I admire that.
I don't lack in that. Thank you.
You made a couple comments. You said that when commissioners come down and do tours, we have an entourage around us, and we are told what to say and what we can't say. And so I just want to let you know that nobody has ever told me. They may have told me. No, I'm just telling you. They may have told me what to say, but I have always said what I want to say. Nobody's ever. I mean, I've been here 18 years, and
okay,
everybody knows me, and I speak my mind, and I'm
That's
very outspoken. So, no, nobody's ever going to tell me what to say. Secondly, sign me up. I didn't know I could. If I can go tour with Danny Gold, just the two of us, sign me up. I didn't know safety-wise. I thought we had to have, you know, other people around us so that it's safe.
I guess that's what I'm saying. I don't know you could either. I'm saying, why can't you?
If you
have a professional who's been there, done that, can crawl all over that place and tell you what everything is and how it works and
right.
work on it, I should be able to give you a tour or just talk face-to-face with you as we're moseying on through and showing you different stuff.
Well, that's
and then if
request.
There's other folks that want to say, hey, what's going on?
So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
That's what I'd like to do. And I am really disheartened. You can't even believe how disheartened I am to hear that from the ground, it looks like we've gone back to where we were when I first started as commissioner when Charlie Hoskin was here, because there was no trust. There was such a lack of trust, and it took many, many years for us to build that trust back up again. So I'm very disheartened. But I appreciate you coming in and giving us your candidates.
Yeah, no problem.
We do come down and take tours, and we're by ourselves, and we look around, and so...
Okay,
that
must be fairly new, because I know in the early days it wasn't the case. And, you know, and the perception out there, there's been a lot of turnover over the years here. You know, we're a lot of new faces and stuff, so it'd be good for the new faces as they're growing in their craft and get to know you guys and trust that they can see you and talk to you. I mean, because in the big picture, you guys are the leaders. You are this is the final, is you guys. You're at the top. Right, you're looking after this public outfit, as well as Kirk and everybody all the way down, right, and us down there on the ground level. I mean, we're looking out for each other like you can't believe. I mean, every day, you know, we're doing this work that can eat you, so we have to look at it in a particular way that we're going to go home in one piece, just as we showed up in one piece. So, you know, the moms, dads, everybody gets to see each other every day, that kind of thing. So it's cool.
We want the same thing.
Right on.
We want everybody to go home. All right. Thank you very much.
Dennis Bowles. We have about a 35-year relationship.
Yes, sir, Dennis.
And I'd like you to contact Rebecca, please, so she can give you my contact information.
Okay.
And if you wouldn't mind.
I wouldn't mind at all.
Appreciate your phone
call. I put it on page 2 of the document. I can give an extra copy here to her so she can relay it to you. And Randy Smith, if you would like. What's that? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I got more in here I can give to you, Rebecca. Okay, we'll do that, Dennis.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? All right. Thank you, Denny.
Thank you.
All right. We have 15 minutes to go here. Let's move into, we have nothing on the regular resolution agenda because we've already taken care of that in the consent agenda. We need to approve the consent agenda.
Yep.
All right. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, including items 10 and 11. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I move we accept the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Randy. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. All right. Kirk, resolutions are completed, so let's begin with manager items.
Yeah, I got a couple of manager items. First, I'd like to call John Stoll up to talk about the high temperature updates on the system. Just we thought it was important. We get a lot of questions when the there's temperature extremes, just to try and understand how our system is holding up. So John's going to provide an update.
Thanks, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Hopefully this was the hottest week of the year that we just concluded. I think today, actually, the forecast is...
Amen.
So, you know, we always, just like we do in the winter, we like to see what's going on and how did our system perform. And good news is the system handled it well. To give you a perspective on what we saw from a load from a peak standpoint, I know we talk about that a lot in the wintertime. Our highest peak on record has been 491 megawatts, and that was back in 2017, I believe.
In the winter.
In the winter, yeah. It was January 5th of 2017. Interesting enough, our second highest peak was just last year, right around Christmas. We hit 487 back when we had that cold snap. So when you look at it from the heat, on Thursday of last week, it hit at Pangborn, the official high was 109 degrees. And our peak was 275 megawatts. So that gives you a relation of summer to winter.
Quite a difference between the two.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Our highest peak last year, with highest summer peak we've ever seen, was that, remember that heat snap we had back at the end of June? It was 276. So we were just 1 megawatt below that. But what's interesting, we've added, one of our largest industrial customers has added 8 megawatts. So that kind of gives you a little bit, you know, colors it a little bit more, so you can tell that. And back then it was 114 degrees was the high that we experienced, so 5-degree difference. So our system performs well. The question, though, comes up, did we see any instances that maybe it was localized? What we tend to see, and there was just a smattering of cable outages, and that's more related to when the soils dry out. It creates an environment where we see some aging cables that may have some issues. They fault out. So that's typical from what we see in late summer when the soils dry out. And we had a few of them, but looking through the log for the past week, probably our largest culprit is still the animal issues we're incurring and some of our protocols we put in place to protect the more sensitive areas prone to fire. So that's it. I also wanted to just mention, too, what we do from a customer standpoint when we have, just like we do when we have very cold temps, when we have extreme high temps, we stop our disconnection process, and we just put a moratorium on that as well. Just as something understanding, it's a unique circumstance, and with the extreme heat, we want to put that in place. So, again, hopefully this was the hottest week of the year, and I think even Thursday it's supposed to be down in the 80s. So, and here we are in August. So, happy to answer any questions.
John, just a quick question, and I'm pleased to hear that we stopped disconnects during the extreme temperature swings. Is there kind of a magic number, or is there something that triggers that, or how is that actuated?
Triple digits, usually.
Triple digits.
And, you know, the crew down there does a good job of looking ahead and trying to understand and have some general awareness of when to invoke that. Same with in cold snaps. But I also, you know, they do a tremendous amount of work working with customers to even avoid that. So, you know, when it comes to shutoffs, they're pretty few and far between.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions for John? Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. And for all the employees that are out in the heat trying to keep things going. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Next. Bob Chain is going to give us an update on a fiber survey that is getting ready to be launched. Bob?
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. Good to see you in person again. It's been a while. We'd like to keep you informed on any outreach that we're doing with the public, and we have coming up here very shortly an effort lying with improving our customer service and customer care. We're looking to do a survey here in the Valley to really gain an insight to what we're doing well and what we can and where we can improve in areas of delivery of service, either the actual product itself or in our response time and basically how we operate connections and work through our providers on that. So we are looking to launch a survey in the next couple weeks. It's going to be executed through an online service, SurveyMonkey. We have a local marketing company that's going to help us digest that information. But once we get that together, we're going to develop a marketing plan that's targeted at addressing those issues or enhancing what we're doing well and make it even better. We'll share that with our service providers here in the Valley so that there's an awareness that we do this from a collaborative way, ultimately to gain a higher take rate on our system and also provide a better quality of service to our customers. We know our take rate's 55%, and there are areas where we have service. Why isn't it 65%? Why isn't it 70? Why isn't it higher? So we through the survey process, we'll get a better perspective of what those challenges might be, and then that will specifically impact how our marketing strategy might be going forward. So I wanted to keep in the loop so that if you were getting any questions from the general public, you'll be aware of it. We are sensitive to sending the survey out to those that can actually receive service. We obviously don't want to send it to those customers that don't have fiber. That would not be a good thing. So we are focusing it on those that are within the footprint of our current services territories to make sure we keep the risk of doing that at minimal. We may miss it here and there, but generally speaking, it's a very concentrated effort on about 8,000 customers in our footprint. We believe that's a representative number that's going to give us the statistical numbers that we're looking for in terms of responses to get a good understanding of what it is we need to do. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
So down the road, you're going to come back to us and we're going to talk about those customers that we don't serve and the challenges that we're facing as an organization. We've been facing, and we've got customers that have been waiting for a long time.
That's correct.
And, you know, since I've been here, that's the big question that I get, and it continues to be the big question. And we're going to, so I'm just prefacing that we're gonna have that discussion down the road, and learn more and figure out what we can do to.
That is correct. Thank you.
Help support that and provide those people that do want those services that can't get it.
Yeah. So on August 15th, we'll come back and we'll give you an update on the PPP program, which I think you're referring to.
Right.
This particular survey is all of our customers within our footprint. But on the 15th, we'll come back and we will discuss the challenges we've had with the PB, the Public Power Benefit Program, and some of the changes we've made and maybe a scenarios of what we could do going forward. And we'll be looking for feedback and guidance from the commissioners at that point.
I just wanted to balance off that we're going to do a survey for those current customers that get it, not send it out to those that don't. But I just wanted to preface that we are continuing to work from the very top level on how we can continue to grow and get out there and meet people.
Yeah, what we're doing under the survey is a bigger perspective of providing the best value to our customer owners under the fiber program, and generically, And then on the 15th, it will be specific to the public power benefit and how we're being challenged to get a build out to those customers.
Okay.
Just to be clear, Bob, I think the survey is going to go to those who have fiber available.
That's correct.
That aren't taking service.
That's
on the
correct.
Fiber.
It's within our footprint that we're currently serving now, so that we don't agitate those that are outside of that footprint with a question about why aren't you taking fiber when we know they want it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we'll be focused.
Okay.
On that.
Just trying to keep that balanced.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't clear on that.
Bob, can you repeat? You said how many customers we have right now? 8,000, is that what you said?
The survey will target 8,000. Our customer coverage area right now is well over 20,000 customers being served. Our service territory is well over 30,000, but we're going to, from a sample size, keep it down to 8,000, which we think statistically should represent a good number of valid answers and responses. Yeah.
So what would be interesting is, at the same time, do an evaluation of what competing services are available that they might be taking. I know personally where I live, and I'm up on a hill, and I should get really good reception. I get about 3 Spokane channels over my antenna on the roof. And so if I didn't have fiber, or some alternative to fiber, I would have really no options for TV. So I can't imagine that in America people don't watch TV anymore and internet. So there must be other options that that they can consider taking. So that I'd be curious to know the answer to that.
Absolutely. And the survey is set up in such a way that it tries to ask all those different questions in different ways, because there can be an alternative. They could be using cellular, which would be very expensive, and maybe they're not aware of a lower cost solution.
Yeah.
And that's why we want to work with our service providers, because sure. We can target some areas where maybe there's lack of communications or awareness. Even today, I still have customers come up to me, Chelan County power customers, that don't even know that we do fiber. They simply didn't know we provided a broadband system. And people have been here for a long time. So there's something missing in our marketing and educational awareness that we want to get a good handle on and see if we can't help those folks. There are some folks we think there's fiber there to them, and they don't even know to ask that question. Yeah. So the survey will help us get through some of that.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Good. That's a great idea.
Okay. Anything else for Bob? Questions? Thank you, Bob. We'll look forward to seeing you again on the 15th.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
That's all for manager.
Bob, when will that information, how long does it take to sort through and get that information filed?
We will do the survey in about 2 weeks. We have an opportunity with this marketing company. They have some free time, so we're going to work with them very quickly. So I think by the end of August, we'll start to have some pretty good ideas of what areas we want to work on, where we're doing well, and the beginnings of the structure of the marketing.
Great.
Would you like me to provide that information?
Yeah, I'll be looking. Just when it's ready, I'm going to be looking forward to what we're hearing from our customers.
Perfect. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
That's it for manager items.
Okay. Do you want to take a couple minutes to do travel and commission items?
We're so close.
Yeah, let's just get through it. Okay.
Hey, that's me.
Okay.
Hi, this is Rebecca Newman, clerk of the board, covering for Lisa Sanders today. We have a little bit of upcoming travel that I'll just run through real quick. Coming up September 14th through 16th, we have the Waputa Association meetings, and we've got Commissioner Arsenault down as attending in person. Did anyone else want to attend those meetings, either in person or virtually?
I will.
Commissioner Smith, in person.
And Commissioner McKenna, in person or virtual?
All virtual.
Thank you.
Partially, some of them virtual.
Virtual or in person?
In person.
Okay.
Sorry, I thought you already called my name.
Okay. So I'll make sure I make appropriate notes here for Lisa. And then coming up the following week, September 21st through the 23rd, we have the Waputa Water Workshop, and it looks like Commissioner Congdon is planning to attend in person.
Right.
Okay. On October 13th, moving to the next month, we have the Waputa Budget Committee meeting. Commissioner Arsenault, are you planning to attend that?
I will. That's virtual.
Virtual. Okay.
Matter of fact, that will only be a virtual option.
Okay. And then, in the interest of time, I think I'll stop there. And
let's go further. Thank you very much. Commission items.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to propose a MIDC general manager and commissioner meeting to set a special date meeting date on Thursday, August 11, 2022 at 5:30 p.m. at Orchard Bar and Bites, 1229 Walla Walla Avenue, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding a MIDC commissioners and general managers meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Any other commission items? All right.
Steve, just one comment. Last week, Commissioner Bowles and I had the incredible opportunity to meet with the A lot of our staff people at Rocky Reach Dam with the several Yakima tribal elders. And while I would like to go in depth, I think I'm looking at the clock as everyone else is, just to say that was a tremendous event.
Great. Really appreciate you guys attending. Hopefully that'll be Okay, follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
So we have a Cupman Act to the next board workshop agenda, and that was completed on July 18th. And actually, that goes along with the discussion today and Commissioner Arsenault's request to have the environmental attributes, so that goes hand in hand there. Mike Bradshaw was going to determine if the Climate Commitment Act administrative allowances can be included in the credits, and that was completed by email to all of you on July 21st. From prior meetings, we had Alex Dunn from Strategies 360, who was going to look at the customer service data on satisfaction levels of renters with average bills over $75. Alex provided that information via email on July 21st as well. And then Rebecca was going to add Commissioner McKenna to the Washington PAD Association visit with commissioners. That's scheduled for September 6th. So Commissioner Arsenault is the chair of PAD Association, and others will be here.
Okay.
And then ready for today?
Today.
Captured a couple of them today. As discussed, Rebecca's going to add the environmental attributes and carbon credits and RA discussion to the next board workshop. Lots going on there. And Rebecca will also coordinate a tour with Commissioner Congdon. Did we miss any?
Can you add me to that list for a tour, please?
That's it.
Okay. Anything else? All right. At this point, we'll open it up for additional public comment. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions. Do we have any additional public comment? Do we have any other matters of general businesses necessarily come before the commission today? Okay. So we have covered our meeting. We will be going 1 o'clock into executive session. So our meeting is finished today. We'll be going into executive session to discuss legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk, as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. 1I, to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likely of a decreased price as authorized by RCW 42.30.110(1)(c), and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCW 42.30.110(1)(g), and that will be for 3 hours. So at this point, the meeting is ended. Were made, no votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.